Okay, my name's Dennis Emery, and our guest today is John English, a legendary figure in Kentucky tennis history. And John, let me tell you why I felt like it was very important for us to do this interview. In 1971, 72, 73, in that time frame, I was an 18-year-old student growing up in New Albany, Indiana. And I was one of those kids who was just completely obsessed with tennis. And a big part of my early exposure was the Louisville Tennis Classic. And for me personally, going to this event and getting to watch the best players in the world, Laver, Rosewall, Ash, Smith, yeah, it just had a tremendous impact on me. It's what laid the groundwork for me as not only as a player, but you know, moving forward as a tournament promoter and as a coach. And I think it's safe to say that the UK program would never have been what it ended up becoming without the influence of you and your brother, Sam. I know that not only had this profoundly affected me, okay, but it profoundly affected a lot of other young growing players growing up in the Louisville and Kentucky area. So, you know, we see the results of this tournament, I think, 50 years later, 50 years after it was founded in 1969. But before we start in on the tournament, talk to me a little bit about you and your brother, Sam. How did you guys get involved in tennis? And what was it like growing up in Louisville and in Kentucky tennis circles at that time?
Well, first of all, thank you, Dennis, for the kind words. And I appreciate you doing what you're doing. Those were wonderful days for tennis in Louisville and tennis in the English family. And I'd like to start off by telling you a little bit, actually, as much as I can, about my brother and how he all made this happen, this being the Tennis Classic. He was a, when he died in July of 2002, and when he did, the tennis publications, the Courier Journal and the Louisville Times at the time, and the TV stations sort of branding Kentucky's Mr. Tennis, and which was flattering to say the least, but in fact, in my opinion, it really was true. He was a real entrepreneur. Actually, he was started off as, of course, being a player, and was an outstanding player for many, many years, and promoter. He really did it all. And I'm obviously a little prejudiced, but he did more for Kentucky tennis than anybody that I'm aware of. And there are a lot of people in Kentucky who do a lot for mm-hmm. tennis. So brag about him a little bit. But he really was the real thing. But he, tell you how he started off. It was really interesting. He was a good athlete when he was a kid. And when he was 11 years old, my parents sent him to a camp in North Carolina. It wasn't a tennis camp. It was a boys' a summer camp, an eight-week summer camp. And my father had been a tennis player. I don't think he was much of a player, but he really appreciated the game and felt as though it was a sport that my brother should be playing and eventually I should be playing. Sam was 4 years older than I was. But anyway, they sent him to camp, and he was insistent that he was not going to play tennis. He told Dad, he said, that's a sissy sport. and Sam was into basketball and all the other sports, but tennis was just not what he was going to do. But anyway, Dad made him take the racket, and it was an eight-week camp, and the counselor was good enough to have him go up and hit some balls against the backboard, and he hit a few balls, and the head tennis counselor said to him, he said, Sam, how long have you been playing tennis? He said, well, I've never played before. And he said, no, I don't think you understood me. I mean, obviously you've played. I mean, when did you start? But he said, this is the first time I've ever played. And what it was, he had a natural forehand. Backhand was something else, but he had a natural forehand. And quickly took to the game, and it just so happened that at the camp that year were two guys who were older than Sam, probably three or four years older, a fellow named Gil Bogley and Jerry Moss, who turned out to be national junior champions. And they were at that camp that summer, so Sam could see that this was not a sissy sport. This was really something. So he really got into it. The camp was 8 weeks long, and he ended up winning the tournament at the end of the year. And, of course, he went for 4 years. He won the tournament every year. I started at the camp when I was nine and started playing and actually got into it just like Sam and of course, enjoyed it thoroughly. But that's how it all started. And he, by the time he was 14 or 15, he went to Male High School, lettered there 3 years. It was a sophomore to a senior year at that time. They had a good team. They weren't state champions, but they had a good team. He was captain the senior year, and he also played basketball. He was first string forward on a team that preseason was ranked number one in the state. It didn't materialize. They had a real good team, but they were not state champions. But anyway, he became a good basketball player and also became president of the class. So he had a lot going for him and was accepted to Yale University in New Haven, Connecticut, and joined a really, really good team. They didn't have national rankings back then, but the press felt like that Yale was one of the 3 to 4 or 5 best teams in the country. And there's Sam's senior year, the only loss they had was to Miami, who was the number one team in the country. But he really learned how to play there, and he, of course, made a lot of connections with good tennis players all over the country. They knew him, and he got to know the right people. But a side story that was interesting, his doubles partner for 3 years was a fellow named Dick Raskin. He was an Eastern player who they played doubles together for 3 years, and Dick Raskin later on became Rene Richards, who ended up playing on the women's tour.
Yeah.
And I think with reasonable success, but a fascinating story that Sam always liked to make jokes about, but he and Dick were close, and I think Dick Raskin's still alive, Rene Richards, and ask about Sam when, you know,
right.
We go back and forth. But Sam always liked to talk about that. Anyway, when he went in the Army, played on the All-Army team, and came back to Louisville, and became involved in the Kentucky Tennis Patrons Foundation, which had been formed about 1953, was put together to promote Kentucky tennis, mostly Louisville tennis, and mostly junior tennis. Sam really got into it. And then on top of that, of course, he started winning all the tournaments. He won the state championship, I think, 4 times. And he won the Louisville Falls City tournament twice. But if he didn't win the tournament, he got beat in the finals.
Uh-huh.
And in those days, the Courier Journal and the evening paper, the Louisville Times, covered it, and Sam became a local tennis individual who everybody knew who he was, and I ended up playing doubles with him. Actually, we won a few things with him together, and it was great fun. I never was the caliber of player he was, but I could play doubles with him, and we did fairly well. That's how he got into it. Tennis was his passion, and he worked for the Courier Journal, and they allowed him to do a lot on outside of his work in the tennis world, and he took advantage of it and really, really made a lot of contributions to our game in tennis in Kentucky.
Well, he worked with the Patrons Foundation. And so that takes us up to about 1965, 1966, somewhere in there. Okay. And in 1969, the Louisville Tennis Center is built. Okay. So you can't have this great tournament that you have in, you know, 70, 71, in that range, without this facility. Was that Sam's vision to do that facility, or was that someone else's?
No, it was absolutely his. He always gave credit to a lot of other people as well. But the truth of the matter was, it was Sam that put it all together. I was on the team, so to speak, but it was Sam. And he, what happened was, the Louisville Bowl Club had hosted the Kentucky Junior Championships, which was one of the three top junior boys championships and girls championships in the country. And in the mid-1960s, sadly, the board of directors at the Bowl Club decided that they were getting a lot of pressure to integrate the event. And that's not what they wanted to do. Mm-hmm. And so Sam took it over. And this was what became the National Junior Clay Court Championships. And he had it at Seneca Park, which at that time was clay courts, which was fine. The first 2 years was at Seneca Park. But he realized that Louisville wasn't going to hold on to an event like that unless we had a facility that was a lot more upscale. So he started working on it. And he got a break. The mayors changed, and the new mayor was Kenneth Schmid, who had been a tennis player. And he understood the need, and the city backed the project. He got Barry Bingham Sr., who owned the Courier-Journal, WHAS, and so forth, behind it, and Joe Creason, who was very involved in tennis, of course, a wonderful writer for the Courier-Journal, and everybody in Kentucky knew Joe Creason. So he had some big names behind him, but Sam was the one that got it together.
So, you know, he gets it open. He said this, the facility opens in 1969. Did, you know, if I'm hearing you correctly, what he basically did was he tried to build this facility to host the national, what became the National Clay Courts. And then the pro tournament, was that an afterthought, or was that something that was there from the very beginning of building the facility?
Well, that's a good question. What initially, Sam felt like that we would not be able to keep the National Junior Tournament unless we had a nice facility. And that was what got it started. And we raised a lot of money, and the city of Louisville backed it financially as well. But he finally got it done in 1969.
Right.
And the National Junior Clay Court Championships were held there in 1969, but prior to that, he was able to attract an exhibition which was just out of this world. It had Pancho Gonzalez, which is arguably would be one of the best players ever to play the game of tennis. He was a little over the hill at the time. He was about 42, but he was in great shape and still an outstanding player. And Roy Emerson, the great Australian, came. Dennis Ralston, who was America's the top player in America at the time, and Earl Butch Buchholz, who was an outstanding player from St. Louis and a tennis promoter. And the four of them came to Louisville in May of 1969. We paid them $100. $100.
$100 each?
$100 each. And we didn't know how it would go, but the exhibition was free to the public. And what happened was we had built 2,300 seats.
Right.
And it was jammed. I mean, we were just overwhelmed with the crowd. Actually, it was a turnaway crowd. The exhibition, Donnie Kaiser, who was probably Louisville's best tennis player, was the umpire. Had a big dedication ceremonies. And tennis was kind of off to the races, so to speak. Sam realized with that kind of response to that exhibition that we could do bigger things. And that's when he started pursuing the tennis classic.
So the next year he ups the prize money from 400 to 10,000, and he brings in Laver, who was, you know, maybe the greatest player of all time. John Newcomb, Ken Roswell, Tony Roach. Laver beats Newcomb in the finals, 4-3. What, you know, until the Bryan brothers came along, what maybe the greatest doubles team of all time, John Newcomb and Tony Roach,
right.
won the doubles. What are your memories of that tournament, that first big money tournament there after the exhibition?
Well, they were wonderful. We actually, in addition to those you mentioned, was Fred Stolle was here, and Cliff Drysdale, the great South African player who still calls the U.S. Open
right.
at 80 years old and does a wonderful job.
Right.
Dennis Ralston came back. We had a field of 16 the first year, and six of them were the great Australians. And actually, Sam and I often said to each other, we pinched each other as to, is this really happening? Do we really have this great field the first year of the event? Because the Australians really made it, and it was wonderful. As you said, Rod Laver ended up beating Newcomb in the finals. They all were, I would say, fun guys. They all wanted to party. They were all very serious about their game. But, of course, the open tennis had not been around very long, and they were thrilled to be having tournaments like this. And they all liked Sam, and so it was a great first year. Had big crowds, and we were ready to go. I mean, it was something that First National Bank, who was our sponsor, we got them to be the sponsor because their three top executives were tennis players. They were big time tennis buffs, and were excited to do it. And the tournament started off being advertised as a $10,000 event, and we realized that that wasn't going to do it, and it went to $25,000 before we even started the event. But it was a great start, to say the least.
Yeah. Any stories, Rod Laver stories?
Yeah. Laver was a very he was awfully nice to us. He was sort of quiet to himself, and not in a bad way. He was a reserved kind of guy.
Uh-huh.
Where Newcomb was a very playful, and as were Fred Stolle. Ken Rosewall was a little older than they were, but a wonderful guy. And Tony Roche was, of course, he and Newcomb became a great doubles team, and they won the doubles that year. They, all of them were just terrific. Cliff Drysdale was a hoot.
Uh-huh.
And it was fun to be around.
The crowd, you know, the thing I remember about that tournament was the crowd's right there on the court,
right.
Essentially. You know, it's not like the U.S. Open now. It's not even like Cincinnati is now. It's, you know, you were right there. And it seemed like the players would come off the court. They would sign autographs. They very much interacted with not just the young players, but the older fans also.
Well, you're right. We had parties at night. They were, and they all came. Nobody did not come. And they interacted with all the sponsors and the volunteers and so forth. No, you're right. They were to a man.
Mm-hmm.
They played to the crowd, and the crowd loved it.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's move on to the next year there. So in 71, you all doubled the prize money. I don't know what to. I don't know if it was 50 or
it went to 50,000.
50,000. So you doubled the prize money. The draw is a 32 draw now. And it says you increased the seating to 4,200. Now, how were you able to do that? Because as I remember that stadium, it was a two-court stadium, you know, over there across the street from the zoo. But a two-court stadium and with the courts around it, outside courts around it, that you used for other matches and practice.
Well, we added about 2,500 seats behind the courts. And the mayor at the time, Frank Burke, helped us with that. And, of course, it was a big addition.
Yeah.
I mean, we ended up with about 5,000 seats, 4,500 to 5,000 seats. And we needed it. I mean, the first year we sold out, and everybody came back the second year. We had, they all came back. And we had a field of 32.
Mm-hmm.
The big addition was Arthur Ashe. And, of course, Labor came back to defend his crown, so to speak.
Right.
And the story there is, which was kind of a sad story, the first day on center court, we had two courts on the center
right.
court. Rod Laver played a fellow named Bill Bowery, who was a nice Australian player. And Arthur Ashe played Nicky Pilic, who was a top-notch Yugoslavian player, on the other court. And I ended up calling one of the lines. I had the baseline on the Laver match, and he was flat as he could be. He just could not play. He just was, nothing was going right. And he's down 5-love in the first set. He gets back to 5-4, and I'm on the baseline. I tell you, I wanted to make a bad call so badly in favor of Laver, which of course was not possible, and I really would never do something like that, but he was our ticket.
Uh-huh.
And anyway, he went out in the first round.
Oh, goodness.
And on the other court, Arthur Ashe was playing Nicky Pilic, and in a fabulous tennis match. I mean, it was a war. And Pilic got upset, throwing his racket up against at the backstop. But he ended up beating Ashe. So two of our biggest draws, John Newcomb did not come back that year. Did come back later, but...
Uh-huh.
So Arthur Ashe, and that was our introduction to Ashe, was to go out in the first round, which was awful. He had come here as an amateur for exhibition, so we knew him,
and a
wonderful man he was.
So Ashe goes out, Labor goes out, tournament director's nightmare, I've been there, okay. Tom Ocker, who had played Ashe, I believe, in the finals of the first U.S. Open in 68 or 69, wins your tournament. The Flying Dutchman, any memories of that or that year other than the debacle that was the first round?
Well, he did. He beat Drysdale, Cliff Drysdale, in the finals. I'll tell you kind of an interesting story. We were having one of the parties the night before the finals, and Drysdale had a drink or two, and I remember him saying to me, you know, he said, I probably ought to stop this. I'm playing for $10,000 tomorrow. I think I better stop right here. And everybody agreed. But Ocker was a very popular winner.
Yeah.
He was, of course, a wonderful player and very, very fast. And he was a real gentleman, and the crowd liked him. Interesting, Laver, of course, stuck around. He was playing with Emerson and played in the finals of the doubles.
Wow.
Which made it very, very interesting. The crowd loved it.
Yeah.
But it turned out to be a good year, but it didn't start off very well.
Well, when did you add the lights to the event, because that was a big deal. I mean, did that happen in this area here, or did that come later?
That was in 1974.
A little later.
We had another year to go. 1972 was, of course, the year of Ashe. He
right.
won the singles and the doubles. And he and Sam became pretty good friends. He stayed with Sam. From then on, every time he came to Louisville, as did Stan Smith and Newcomb. Most of the players stayed with people.
Right.
They were housed, and they had good relationships, and it made our tournament a place where they felt like they were at home. But, the lights came a little later, and I'll tell you about that.
Okay, so Ashe wins the singles and doubles. Did he play doubles with Nastasi?
He played with, I think he played with Bob Lutz. Bob Lutz, you know, when he played with Stan Smith for years, they were a great doubles team. And Bob Lutz wasn't that good a singles player, but he was an outstanding doubles player. And they won it rather handily.
Yeah, I know you said Arthur developed a good relationship with Sam.
Yes, he did.
But what do you remember about Arthur Ashe? You know, clearly one of the great champions of American tennis and one of the great gentlemen in American tennis. Anything on him as a person when he was here at the event?
He was very popular. I mean, when Ashe played, the stands were full. He was dignified, actually. He was a scholar, and I often wondered what would happen to him if he hadn't lost his life to at an early age, where he would have gone with his life. But he was easy to be around. I can remember I saw him. I used to go to Washington every year and recruit players to the Louisville tournament.
Right.
And I'd run into him up there, and he always came over and spoke. You know, he had a crowd around him, but he always came over to spoke. And I ran into him in New York, and the same thing. A real gentleman. And I don't have any real stories about him, except that he met his wife here. Jean was a photographer. And I have a picture of her taking pictures at the tennis tournament, and the next year they came back married. And she became a big part of his life, of course.
Stan Smith and Ashe, you know, very much joined, same agent, Donald Dell,
right.
You know, played Davis Cup together. What about Stan when he was here?
He enjoyed coming to Louisville. And he also became good friends with my brother. But he couldn't win here.
Yeah, the clay wouldn't help Stan.
he kept saying, and Newcomb never won here.
Uh-huh.
He won doubles, but Stan Smith played with Eric Van Dell, and then they couldn't even win the doubles. He just was not very, he didn't have a lot of success here. Mm-hmm. But he came three or four times, and of course was a big addition, because he was at the top of his game in the mid-70s, and we really wanted him, and he did, and he was here, I think, three different times. Good guy.
So Sam, you and Sam, you recruit these players, but they end up coming, you know, and supporting this event, and as I think I told you once before, I would have some interactions with Stan Smith, and he would always ask me, how's Sam English doing? And, you know, like almost right off the bat, how's Sam English doing? It seemed like those guys had some special relationships. What do you think caused them to have those special relationships with Sam? What was it about Sam or the tournament that drew those guys here?
Well, he was an excellent people person. He could talk their language, and they respected him. As an individual, and he just was an individual that could get along with people, and he made the effort, and the players realized he made the effort, and they understood what he was trying to do here in Louisville, and wanted to help out. Actually, yeah, he was just easy. He was an easy person to get along with, as you well know.
Yeah. Well, in 73, there's an addition to the tournament, which is, I think in 73, the TV coverage comes in with PBS Sports, PBS Network.
They were here 5 years.
Uh-huh.
Bud Collins, who was a very colorful commentator.
Right.
And Donald Dell, who was all involved in tennis in so many ways. And Jack Kramer, the great player who stayed involved in tennis after he quit playing as a player. The three of them are here 5 years and were a big addition to the event for PBS. interesting story. My brother's daughter, Elizabeth, was a good young tennis player, and Bud Collins invited Elizabeth to come up into the TV stand, and all the way for 2 years, when she was 12, 13, 14 years old, she was kind of their gopher. If they needed Coca-Colas or they needed whatever they needed, she could help in any way, and it was typical Bud Collins that he would do that type of thing. Very colorful, to say the least.
In his clothes and in his language and in everything.
Everything.
He was always dressed out in plaid, different.
Right.
You know.
He didn't know what he was going to wear.
But this event, I thought, you know, the PBS coming in and doing it really increased Louisville's exposure on the international tennis market. The brand, as they would say now, the thing. I believe, you know, what I always used to look forward to growing up was the Monday night finals, you know, of that clay court circuit through the summer, Washington, Indianapolis, Louisville, and, you know, listening to Bud Collins and those guys. But Monday nights, you know, different than your normal tennis where you have the finals on Sunday, you know, so you have to put the lights in, I'm assuming, for the Monday night. For the Monday night finals, right?
We did. In 1974 was the first year we had the lights.
Right.
And of course, gave us two sessions. You'd have a day session and a night session, which doubled our revenue. Those who were there for the day session had to leave the facility and come back in for the night session.
Right.
And PBS gave us a lot of credibility. And of course, Bud Collins and Donald Elbert, excellent at what they did. But it was that was a very positive turning point for us when we had the lights. Mayor Harvey Sloan and then County Judge Todd Hollenbach got those for us, and they paid for it. And
how much was that? Do you know?
No, I don't remember. I really don't. But it made the event as far as...
Yes.
We couldn't have done it at night, but of course, without the lights.
Right.
And it was so hot in Louisville that people preferred the evening sessions, so the night sessions were a lot more successful. And of course, all the players wanted to play at night for the weather and the TV.
Right. So, Donald Dell and them, they did the... Did they do the semifinals and finals? Did they do the whole week? How did they do it?
As I recall, they pretty much did the whole week. I don't think they did the early round matches.
Right.
But, you ask a question, I'm not really sure I can remember the answer, but they, as I recall, they were here all week. And Barry McKay was part of that as well.
Right.
I'm sure they were here all week.
I've had several discussions with Donald Dell. I've run into him different places, and he talks about how much he enjoyed coming to Louisville, you know, for the event, which always kind of caught me off guard, you know, because he was the czar, basically, and he ran the D.C. tournament. And as you said, that led to a lot of potential conflicts of interest of him doing the TV, doing the players and running tournaments, you know. Yeah. But any interesting Donald Dell stories? I mean, because, you know, I'm assuming you would negotiate with him a little bit for Ash and Smith and Van Dell and some of those Americans to come.
Well, there again, he went to Yale. He was behind Sam. He was not at Yale when Sam was there, but
right.
It wasn't long afterwards. And they had that Yale connection. So they became good friends. And they communicated a lot. That the Washington tournament was the week before ours.
Right.
So I'd go up every year and try to recruit some players. He came here as a junior and played as a junior. He was a very good junior player.
Right.
And he made some Louisville connections. Sam was one of them. And he just enjoyed coming to Louisville. It was part of his summer circuit, you know.
Right.
He loved it. Yeah.
So the next year, you know, well, 74, 75, Vilas is a two-time champion. You know, I don't know if you've seen the recent Netflix thing on Guillermo Vilas and what he's doing now, but very interesting, and his career training with Tyriac. So he becomes a two-time champion for you all when he's probably two or three in the world, you know. And one of the greatest clay court players ever behind Borg. Any interesting Vilas stories? Because he's a different bird.
He is, and was. We thoroughly enjoyed him. He the first year he came, he had just, I think, gotten out of the Army, and he had real short hair. And he had these big topspin forehand and backhand. So he was kind of a novelty. We really didn't know what to think of him, but he didn't win his first year he came, but he made his mark. He came five times, and he won it three. But the next year he came back with the long hair and hardly recognized him. But he was a popular player here. He stayed with the Bo Nixon family, and they became very close. And so every year he came back, he stayed with the Nixon family. But he was a terrific player and a clay court player, and we always enjoyed him. He loved the ladies, and they loved him. Uh-huh. And we enjoyed him.
Well, another guy that Vilas was tied into was Tyriac.
That's right.
Did he come and? He always looked like he would be impossible to deal with, but was he?
No. he was, the first year he came without Nastassi. Nastassi came with him the next year. But he was a bull of a man, and a big beard, and of course he was from Romania, which at that time was behind the Red Curtain. And we didn't really know quite how to take him or what to think about him. But the truth of the matter is, he couldn't have been nicer. He wanted his way, but he was very pleasant about it and was a big addition to the tournament. I was a little intimidated by him. I don't know whether Sam was or not, but I was.
Yeah.
I mean, he was sort of overbearing, but no, he was very pleasant, easy to deal with.
And his buddy was Nastassi, who you referred to, who was completely nuts. And any funny Nastassi stories when he was here? Because although he never won it, yeah, I know he played and was popular to watch. People would love to come out and see.
They did. And when he practiced, big crowds around his court, they wanted to know who this Nastassi was. Again, somebody from Romania. In those days, you know, you didn't know quite what to think about that. But he was a great athlete. I mean, he was a really good athlete. And the crowds loved him. And he played to the crowds. But he never stayed with any of the families here. He always stayed in the motel. So we never really got to know him very well. Never got to know him very well. He was a little distant. Mm-hmm. He didn't know us. He didn't know Sam. And he was a little distant. But a great player.
You bet. Well, let's move on. Then, you know, Harold Solomon becomes a champion. And then he had also won the National Clay Courts, comes back and wins as a pro. But in 78, 79, big changes come to the tournament. You all now, I guess, sort of a good news, bad news kind of thing. You've had all the success. You have the TV coverage. Your purses have gradually gone up. The level of play is high. You know, you've been able to attract through just different means the best players in the world to come. You have lights, so you have two sessions. And it seems unnatural that Louisville's going to move into the new ATP Grand Prix series. And you do. It's 28 events in the Grand Prix. Includes Wimbledon. Includes the U.S. Open. Includes Louisville. Okay? Your prize money goes up to $175,000. Okay? Big number back then.
It was.
Okay? CBS Sports comes in and signs a contract to do the television rights. But it seems like it's kind of going from a mom-and-pop operation to big-time professional sports. Tell us about that transition.
Well, through 1975, we could never complain about our draws. We had the top players here. And Louisville got used to seeing the top players. They wanted to see the Arthur Ashes and the John Newcombs and the Nastassis and so forth, and Rod Labors. And they all showed up. And through 1975, we were very successful in getting all the good players. But in 1976, it started changing. I think the players were beginning to make a lot of money. They were picking and choosing where they wanted to go. Louisville's weather was not attractive. I mean, we had hot, sweltering weather, and then started having rain, which ended up being a real problem for us in the end. And it became more difficult to track the players. And then we changed the name of the event from the First National Tennis Classic to the Louisville International Tennis Classic. The First National Bank changed their top executives. They moved from tennis players to golfers, and they weren't as interested in the tournament as the tennis playing executives were, and that hurt us. They just weren't as involved as they could have been. Although Biff Roberts, who worked for the bank and was the head of marketing for the bank, was one of the co-chairs and a great co-chair for us. He did as much as he could with the bank, but they kind of lost their interest. And so we brought in a number of other smaller sponsors. First National stayed with us, but we had at one point six or seven different sponsors to cover the expenses. But we could see that the things were changing, and we were going to have to change with it.
Solomon wins in 78. John Alexander wins in 79. A little bit of surprise on clay courts with his game. But like I say, it just didn't seem to be quite the same without Labor, Ash, and those guys who were older now, you know, in all fairness. Those guys were older. They weren't playing as much at that point. You know, they were cutting back on their thing. So in 1980, you decide not to go the Grand Prix route. You all withdrew from the circuit.
That's right.
You know, were there other reasons? Were there any other reasons why to just pull out, other than did the finances just become too hard of a nut to crack?
That was part of it. I think the reasons were multiple. We were losing or not getting the best players, and the sponsors and the box holders and the people who were supporting the event recognized that. We had a good tournament.
Right.
We had good players, but not the top guys.
Yeah, because Solomon was top 10 in the world.
Right.
Yeah.
He won it twice. And always came. He and Eddie Dibbs and John Alexander, they all came, but they were just below the top tier.
Right.
That caused a problem. The weather was a big deal. The hot, humid weather and the rain. It almost became a sad joke that when the tournament came around, so came the rain.
Uh-huh.
And in 1979, it rained almost the whole tournament, and we had to play it indoors. The only courts in town that were clay courts were at Mockingbird Valley, and Mockingbird Valley in the summertime was basically closed, and the courts were not in good condition. And so we had to play maybe as much as half of the matches there with no crowds,
right,
and not very good courts. And I will say the players were great about it. They understood that we didn't have a choice, but that was sort of the beginning of the end. Jack Kramer was here in the late 70s and told my brother and myself that we needed to go to hard courts, that the tennis world was going to hard courts, and that we should be looking for that. And so we did. We made a real effort to look at another location. And we went down on the river, at the corner of Zorn Avenue and River Road, where the Louisville Water Company has a tower down there and had a lot of land, and tried to negotiate with the city and the water company to move our facility down there. The tennis center had, we still had the National Junior Clay Court Championships, and the tennis center was a very busy place. They loved the clay courts, and we didn't feel like we could turn those courts into hard courts. So,
not after fighting so hard to get it built as a clay court facility.
So we, anyway, Sam and I went to the water company board meeting, and we realized pretty quickly that they're not going to have any part of it. They were not interested. So we had to stick with the facility, and Creason Park, we had more space there at Creason Park, but the investment in the facility was going to be tremendous, and the sponsorships was going up every year. And at that time, there was no Humana. There was no Papa John's. There was no UPS, and no Yums. Mm-hmm. Louisville didn't have those big corporations that could be possible sponsors or to help us with the finances. And that was a problem. Those were the reasons, but we eventually had to phase it all out.
So in 1980, you keep your committee together. You know, the patrons are still in there, and you decide you're going to have a tournament, which becomes a really good tournament. But ironically, you have Jimmy Connors as your champion, beats Eddie Dibbs in the finals.
That's right.
A great final.
Yeah.
But you have to play it indoors because of the rain.
We had an 8-man draw with $105,000 prize money, which was a good chunk of money. And Jimmy Connors' family came and was great, won the tournament, but it rained the whole time. And we played almost no matches at the tennis center. And we had to hustle around, got Bellarmine to allow us to use their basketball gymnasium as the facility. And we found a court to lay down. And it was a 24/7 deal where we had to change everything.
Right.
We had a successful tournament, but ended up playing most of it at Bellarmine and indoors, and that kind of did it for us. We couldn't survive that. The sponsors and the box holders and so forth said, and it happened now 3 or 4 years in a row. So they, it was a sad day for the English family.
Yeah. Committee stays together. You put together a few more tournaments in 81, an exhibition with Mel Purcell.
Right.
Victor Amaya, who had a local connection here, ended up marrying a girl from Louisville.
Right.
And then in 82, you have a senior event. You bring back almost kind of a farewell party. You know, you bring back Laver and some of those really great Aussies. And then in 83, you all decide, we've had enough. We're gonna shut it down.
That's correct. You pretty well said it. Laver and Roseball and Stalin, they all came back in 82. But they had gotten older, and they still were superstars. But it wasn't the same. It wasn't the same thing.
Uh-huh.
And so we just did it 1 year. And then I think we decided that that was it. I mean, he ended up attracting the Davis Cup here twice.
Uh-huh.
at Freedom Hall, but the Americans got beat before they could get to Louisville, which was very disappointing for him. But he stayed involved in tennis, of course, for all those years. And
did some exhibitions. He mm-hmm. put together some more exhibitions. The Davis Cup clearly was his lifelong dream to have that. I know he was heartbroken. Well, as we wrap up this section here on the pro tournament, on the Louisville International Tennis Classic, is there anything you feel like that made the event really special? Because I think it was just a golden time. You know, it impacted the community in so many ways. But is there anything? I know the housing you felt like was a big deal. The parties. I remember people talking about the parties on the river, you know, overlooking the river. But was there anything else you felt like that really made the tournament special?
Well, the fact that we were, particularly those first 6 years, that we were able to attract the really, really good players. And they enjoyed Louisville. They really did enjoy it. And that was a big part of it. Tennis was booming at that time.
Right.
Tennis was booming in Louisville. Indoor courts were being built right after another. It was Louisville's heyday in tennis was the 70s because of the tournament.
Yeah.
The ripple effect from the tournament was the fact that a lot of indoor courts were built and tennis grew dramatically those 10 years that the tournament was being held. And the volunteers, we had great volunteers. I mean, nobody was paid. It was on the volunteer. I mean, the linesmen and the ball boys who are now paid, you know, they got their T-shirts and their
hats.
And hats. but it was a special time in Louisville.
I know it impacted a lot of young players.
It did.
And other players, you know, like the Gary Plocks, the Kevin Walshes, the J.T. Sims. I know all those people were impacted. But you also, you referenced the Louisville Country Club Tournament, Louisville Invitational, that the wild card from that, I'm assuming it was called a wild card back then. Now it's called a wild card. But they received, the winner of that got automatic entry. So Jackie Cooper won that one time. I know Gary Plock won that one time. Did that have did you feel like that had a big impact on the draws at the site, the, you know, people wanting to come out and watch?
Oh, no question. There were five players, Jackie Cooper, Gary Plock, Charlie Ellis, Kevin Walsh, and Mel Purcell, who was arguably, not very much so, but the best tennis player, male tennis player ever to come out of Kentucky. Mel played in it two or three times, but he got in the draw anyway. He was good enough to play. But Gary Plock had been a ball boy early on.
Right.
And came back as a player later. Jackie Cooper was one of Louisville's all-time best tennis players, and he played it in a couple of times. And Charlie Ellis was really a top player, as you know, and Kevin Walsh was too. So it was an attraction. I mean, Victor Amaya married a Louisville girl. Actually, the girl lived across the street from where we were living at the time. And that was, you know, he became sort of a Louisvillian as well, having married here. And Victor was very successful here.
Right. Won the doubles, I know, with Dupre once.
He did.
Yeah. Well, last thing I guess I would say, I just remember the newspaper covering this event. You know, I mean, they covered it. I'm assuming that's because Barry Bingham liked tennis and Joe Creason liked tennis and those guys liked Sam. But there couldn't have been an event covered any better than the Courier Journal.
It really was.
Yeah.
Billy Reed was part of that too. Unfortunately, he covered the rain, which was not overly positive. But Billy was out there all the time, and the TV stations were there 24/7. We could not complain about the coverage we got, and of course, it helped attract the crowds and the interest in the tournament. They were very helpful, except the fact that they wouldn't. That was another thing that hurt us in the First National Bank. They wouldn't call it the First National Tennis Classic. And
now you say they, being the newspaper.
The newspaper wouldn't. The TV would, but the newspaper called it the Louisville Tennis Classic. And First National, you know, they wanted their name out there, and the newspaper would not call it. And that was not good. That was a mistake, I think, that the paper made, and I don't think would make today. But that was the feeling in the time. They felt like it was free advertising, which it really, you know, we never quite agreed with.
Yeah, no, because they're writing you a check.
That's right.
That's right. You know, I guess last question.
Sure.
On this, anything you guys would do differently?
Good question. Golly. Not really.
I was going to say, it doesn't seem like there's much you can really do.
I don't think so. We had great volunteers. We had wonderful sponsors. We had a good facility for its time. And no, I don't think so. There were a lot of people involved. I don't know that I can think of anything off the top of my head.
John, is there anything else you'd like to get on here about the tournament?
I think we pretty well covered it. It's, you know, I have a hard time getting my head around this, but it was 50 years ago.
Right.
That, you know, 50 years ago that we put this thing together. It's hard to believe it's been 50 years.
Right.
So, but we got a lot of great memories. A lot of fun.
Well, thank you for talking about it.
Thank you.